Mark Bishop LaFleche, good morning to you. How are you?
Very well, Andy. Very well. Good to be here.
Really good to meet you. And we're at the 2025 Rural Investment Symposium. Mm-hmm. And we spoke yesterday, and what was really interesting to me about you, really you had two different differentiators. Number one, what was interesting to me was your royalty streaming company, mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong. And I really think that is a very safe way, yet significant upside way to play the junior mining space. That's number one. But number two is what made a differentiator. You're in the critical minerals space, and mm-hmm. I want to say you're not the first one, but you are the first one that I can think of mm-hmm. that I've really talked to. So work all of that out for me. Tell us about the company, why you're in critical minerals, what critical minerals, and you're a royalty company.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's just start with the basics then, Andy.
Sure.
So Ecora listed in London, ticker ECOR on the TSX, ECOR. And also we trade on the OTCQX platform in the US, the ticker ECRAF. The business market capitalization of around $210, $220 million.
Let's pin that because I'm going to ask you that again. And I want to know your OTC listing because I'm a US investor. And I'm more than likely, just so everybody knows, I do not own Ecora yet at the dropping of this video, but that will more than likely change in my portfolio.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
So those are the basics. We're a royalty company that in many ways is, as you mentioned, somewhat differentiated by virtue of our commodity selection and our commodity exposure. So we've built a portfolio today that offers exposure through asset value. 80% of our net asset value is to base metals, of which over 50% is copper. So copper is really the core of our portfolio. And in addition, we've sort of built it out thematically to include other commodities as well, such as uranium, vanadium. We have cobalt exposure, nickel exposure. And we look generally, in terms of commodities, when we think about buying new royalties, at the critical mineral suite. That's actually, I think, pretty unique in the royalty sector. There's certainly there are many precious metals-focused royalty companies. But for the critical minerals piece, I would say it's a fairly relatively lower risk way via the royalty model to get exposure to the critical minerals themes. And I think in answer to the second part of your question, well, why critical minerals? I think any way you cut it, the outlook for these commodities in terms of the supply demand fundamentals is quite compelling. If you believe in data center increases, power consumption increases, GDP growth, increased power consumption as the world continues to develop and urbanize, renewable energy, EV demand, any way you cut it, these ultimately, I think, all point towards one sort of overarching theme, which is growing energy demand, growing energy demand in the form of electricity, and that's all really metal intensive.
Yes, I would agree with you 100%, and that's why all of investors, I think, critical minerals, whether that's, I don't know if you can say that's copper, maybe you can answer that, but to cobalt, to uranium, on the energy side, to tungsten, I don't know if that's in any of your exposure, but anything of that nature, or nickel even, if where we're going, whether it's through, I guess, military contracts, whether it's through EV, green energy, whatever, that is really the path we're going, and we're in such short supply of that. So I'm agreeing with everything you said, but what another differentiator with you guys is that you guys are a royalty company. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that? How does that work? And this is a rhetorical question almost to you and me, but to all of the investors, how do royalties work? How do you get paid and how do you make money?
Yeah, well, there are different types of royalties, and let's just start with the basic, which is a net smelter return royalty. And we'll start with that one because those apply generally to our copper exposure. Not all, but most. Simplistically, we make a payment to the mining company or the developer, and in exchange for that payment, we own an entitlement to a percentage of the value of copper as and when it's extracted. And by the royalty area usually is quite large. usually offers upside. So, you know, mineral deposits in copper usually have a 20 to 30 year reserve life. Beyond that, defining a reserve life is not the ideal capital allocation piece for mining companies. So big deposits have a tendency to get bigger and last longer. A good example is our Mantos Blancos royalty. That mine has been running for over 50 years. Today has a mine life that's reserve based just over 20 years and is likely to be longer. So with the royalty model, what you have exposure to is price. In other words, if price goes up or price goes down, that'll be a factor in determining how much our royalty entitlement will be in any given period. And number two, production. Production is more or less or lasts longer. That's also a key factor. But what you don't have direct exposure to is the operating costs of extracting the minerals, of course, as you know, and also the capital costs of building the mine and maintaining the mine. So once we have exposure, I think, once we've bought the royalty, you benefit over time, I think, from a number of factors, purely from supply-demand trends or the project getting bigger. But another key factor, ultimately, is the inflationary aspect of commodities over time. So 20 years ago, copper was less than $1 per pound. Today, it's call it $4.50 per pound. And I don't know if in 20 years from now, we'll be at $18 per pound as well. But what I do see in the world today are really strong inflationary pressures. And ultimately, you really see that come through right upstream extraction of minerals. By definition, that's where you see inflation. So as a royalty model, you're standing to benefit from a number of factors, but the inflationary protection aspect is certainly a big one, I think, for folks when, you know, you compare that to the risk of going directly into a mining equity. And if you see, you might see inflation on prices, but commensurately adjusted for inflation on operating costs, which may not lead to that same sort of margin expansion that is possible in the royalty sector.
Yeah, and to talk to all my listeners and viewers, really this is the reason why I love the royalty space. There's very little cash going out, but there's a lot of cash coming in if the portfolio is large enough. And that's what I want to address with you. And I believe that your portfolio is in talking with you yesterday. So you're getting a little clipping. A little is actually, if you have a big portfolio, you're getting a lot of clippings, a lot of a little clipping. So your risk is very, very much diversified, yet you still have a lot of leverage and an undervalued asset and an undervalued commodity. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, absolutely, right? That's absolutely true. So let's talk about Ecora as an example.
Yeah.
So our business generated around $63 million of revenue last year.
$63 million in revenue.
In US dollars of revenue.
What are your margins on that?
Pretty substantial. I mean, our operating cost base is around $10 million, so.
So your margins are huge, and that was a rhetorical question, but I wanted you to say that. Royalty companies and streaming companies have huge margins because they have such low operating costs. They don't have to worry about labor. They don't have to worry about a cost of production, cost of mining, whatever, cost of energy. It doesn't matter. They just got to keep the lights on and pay your salary and whatever else.
Well, as we were speaking about it yesterday, our business generated revenue of around $6 million per employee last year.
Yeah, that is stupid good. Here's the rub, if you would. I want you to address this with Ecora and with royalties. It can take a while to get them going. So if you have a royalty on a junior cobalt mine, a junior copper mine, a junior nickel mine, or it could even be a developer that's not going in production yet, you're not getting paid, right? So you have to have a portfolio of stuff that's hitting or going to be close to hitting in the pipeline, because that's how you're going to get paid. So address that concern that I would have as an investor. What do you have in the pipeline that you can comment about and that's hitting, that getting paid? You obviously have a lot because you just had $50 million in margin. So,
yeah, well, why don't we start with the producing portfolio then?
Yes.
And if you
good differentiator, you have a producing portfolio and then you have a portfolio that's going to be hitting. Go ahead.
Yeah. So let's start with that. So, I mean, if you zoom out and look at our portfolio complexion just in terms of exposure. So, in other words, if you were to say, how much of our portfolio, as estimated by value by research analysts, is allocated to assets that are already in production, to those that are at the near-term development phase, so for the most part permitted, close to a final investment decision, but not yet under construction. And then the third leg I would characterize as longer dated, so earlier than a definitive feasibility study stage. Our portfolio weighting is slightly more than 50% to assets that are in production already, and then 30 to 40% to that next wave, and then around 10 to 15% of those that are at the earliest stage.
Yeah.
And I think what that does if you're a royalty company is, if you take that complexion and further diversify it but maintain it, you're able to achieve what is, you know, what you see in much larger royalty companies as well, which is almost a treadmill effect, to put it simplistically, where as you move forward in time, assets that are in production often see expansions if it's profitable or there's the opportunity to do so. Assets that are close to that production stage move into construction and then move into production. And you sort of assets that are slightly earlier stage move forward, right? And that's really the ideal portfolio complexion. But we've been really careful to keep the majority of our portfolio to assets that are in production already. And that's in some ways allowed us to have a long track record of dividend payments. The stock currently offers on a last year's basis a 3 to 4% dividend yield, which is important to our investors as well as part of the wider growth story. And then looking to the future, I think this is really exciting about Ecora. We have a portfolio of royalties that, you know, in the next 5 years are expected to take our copper, base metals, critical minerals royalties from sort of 20 to 30-ish this year to potentially over 100.
Wow.
And that excludes some of the longer dated projects in our portfolio as
That's
well.
That's five times.
So Ecora is really at a phase today where you're starting to see at the first phase of growth is revenue growth from assets that are already in production via expansions or production increases. And then the next phase later this decade expected to come from assets that are, as I mentioned, at close to the final investment decision stage. And then into the next decade, we have another wave of growth from projects that are earlier stage, but that are attractive. And we've been pretty disciplined in building our portfolio and acquiring royalties over projects that operate within the wider commodity complexes, within the lower half of the industry cost curves. And we've done that for two reasons. Number one, lower cost assets, in other words, the assets with the higher margins, have generally the ability, usually, to operate and generate strong cash flows throughout commodity price cycles, and thus the assets stay in productions and we receive our royalty entitlements. And number two, for assets that are not yet built, those that have generally the lowest cost usually also are accompanied by the best economics and are the ones that are most likely to come into production earlier or sooner or faster, relatively speaking. So around 80% of our assets are located in the first or second cost of the cost curve, of global cost curves, which we, as a royalty investor, I think that's really important, as I mentioned, given, as you said, the risks are, number one, an asset that's in production can no longer operate and generate positive free cash flow, or number two, delays. So we've been pretty disciplined in that sense to build a very, what we see as defensive portfolio. And again, it comes back to the overarching point of royalties being a defensive way to get exposure to mineral extraction.
Yeah, and I like to see, and again, this is, let me talk to my viewers and listeners here. It's like when you're dealing with a royalty company, I think you have to put on your private equity hat as opposed to your junior mining hat. Because what you're looking at, or you what you want to see, what I want to see, is what's coming up on cash flow, as opposed to a junior miner with drill, baby, drill. Drill, because that's what's going to move the needle. What's going to move the needle to me in a junior mining, in a royalty company, is cash flow, and margins. And again, that's really, in this space, it's a much different way about how to look at this space. So, Mark, is there anything you want to tell our viewers and listeners before we leave here? How do they find you? Give us your any thoughts, and also give us your ticker symbols again on what exchanges you're traded on.
I think it's a nuanced point, but it comes back to the royalty model. And you know, we spoke about Ecora's market capitalization. Ecora has a market capitalization of just over $200 million, which makes Ecora small cap.
Yes.
However,
that's still significant though.
However, if you were to say, what is the market capitalization of all the companies that are listed over which we have royalties, you'd be somewhere over $200 billion. So Ecora, yes, is small cap, is a royalty company, but the portfolio is mega cap. It's
mega
diversified.
Cap, right.
Right? And that's a nuanced point, but it's an important
one. That's a great point, because it's de-risked.
Relatively speaking, right?
Speaking,
you know, $200 million is not, in a royalty company, is not the same, I think, if it's a $200 million single asset developer. It's very diversified, relatively speaking, with counterparties in our portfolio like Vale, BHP, Capstone, amongst other really strong operators with blue chip names in the sector.
Yeah.
In terms of our tickers though, so why don't we start
Please
with
again.
The US?
Yes.
In the US, our ticker is ECRAF on the OTCQX platform. In Toronto, it's ECOR, that's on the TSX, and in London, ECOR.
Mark Bishop Lafleche, I said that correct?
You did, Andy. Yes.
Excellent. Ecora Research, I want to thank you so much for your time. As of this recording, I am not a shareholder, but full disclosure, that will more than likely change relatively soon. Thank you so much for your time.
Great to be here. Thanks, Andy.
Excellent.